do these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you're feeling in flare. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursue.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Sorry about those technical difficulties. I don't know what happened. As soon as I went to go get on the show tonight, my internet crapped out on me. I still can't really get it to work, but it's working for Skype apparently. So, okay, here we go. It's coming back online now. Yeah, wow, that was horrible. Perfect timing, right? 5 minutes before I go on my show, I can't get the internet to work. Anyway, we're back now. Thank you all for tuning back in, and I'm really happy to be back once again here on UCY.TV and the Anti-Media Radio the antimedia.org/radio. Sorry, this thing got me a little mixed up here from my normal routine. We're going to start working on getting our panel together as they weren't able to call in since I was having internet connectivity issues. But we're working on it. Got a bunch of stuff to talk about tonight. Interesting group, interesting panel of people joining us. So you know, we'll see how it all goes. Let me send a message out here to my people and let them know that we're online. All right, cool. There's that. A lot of interesting stories tonight on the anti-media. I mean, in my opinion, some of the better coverage we've had. A lot of counter-narrative stuff. The first of which, 10 facts the mainstream media won't tell you about the war in Syria. I mean, this is pretty big because, you know, we're getting a lot of disinformation about what's going on in Syria. It's really hard to decipher between the propaganda and what's real. And if you scroll over to this article, if you look at the last point there, the first fact, I guess, is that a lot of the media's sourcing for the conflict in Syria is from the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, which is literally just some guy that lives in England that runs a t-shirt shop that is somehow like the go-to source for all things going on in Syria. And like, this guy's not even there. He's not even on the ground. He's not even like collecting data. He's not even collecting hard information. He's just selling.
He's the Snopes of Syria.
Yeah, he's like the Snopes of Syria. Anyway, hey, DB, glad to have you back on, my longtime co-host. What's up, man? How you doing?
Not too bad. Not too bad at all. You know, just busy as hell from being back, and now I'm in the real world again. Glad to be back. That's all I can say. East Coast, when me and you were in Philly last time for the Free Your Mind conference, I think it was 2015. I don't know, it had a way different feel just from 1 year to the next, almost like the police force was all geared up for this one and nothing went down, but it was just crazy. It was a crazy different feel for the city.
Yeah. Last time we were in Philly during regular times when everyone's not all hyped up and in a craze or whatever you want to call this election season, it was, you know, it was not that bad. It was pretty laid back. I mean, you know, it's when you're down right there in downtown, it's pretty hectic down there and stuff, but I mean, it's Philly, awesome city, a lot of history down there, a lot of good people. But, you know, these political debates, these elections, they bring out the worst in people instead of bringing out the best. You know, and in a perfect world, in a perfect government, in a perfect media, we would have intellectual debates where, you know, there was actually, like, concrete, legitimate philosophies that were being debated on a national stage so that we could actually improve the state of affairs in the country and the world, especially when your country has such a huge footprint around the world. But in the United States, it's like a race to the bottom. You know, it's like, you know, who can bomb more people, who can take away more of your freedoms, who can make the situation basically worse while at the same time selling you an idea that somehow it's going to get better. And it literally just brings out the worst in people. In fact, there was a story today that a guy was charged for assault because he assaulted his girlfriend because they disagreed over the presidential election. I mean, this is getting ridiculous, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, dude. It's kind of some of the stances people are taking that I've known for many years are kind of indefensible, and yet they'll try. So I don't feel like between the two candidates right now we even have a choice. If you're not voting third party, be it Johnson or Green, I would say you're not doing the country a service, because we really do need a third and a fourth party, maybe a fifth. I think me and you talked about five being like a natural progression, where you have like this, the real moderate, meaning kind of in between, and then you have varying shades of gray of each side, where you have, you know, liberal, and then you have progressive, or you'll have conservative, and then you have Tea Partier. And it's, you know, whatever sliding scale or extreme you're on. But I think everybody realizes, you know, we're entering into a new robber baron type economy, where it became, it was like kind of like a feudalist thing at the beginning of the century, where you had like the first billionaires, like Rockefellers. And even back then, they could affect social change. Now it's an art form. So you have people at the top that are not just buying things, but actually affecting the way people live and think and, you know, go about their lives from cradle to the grave, really. It's kind of a, it's not a brave new world. It's, I say, if I ever write a book, it's going to be called Wuss New World.
It's a cowardly new world out there, isn't it? Very cowardly. So, yeah, a lot of things to talk about tonight. I mean, whether we go political, geopolitical, I mean, the stuff going on overseas. There was a suspected knife attack in England, which is being labeled a terror attack. We're going to have some interesting coverage on that, as well as, you know, there was a huge, awful attack in Japan last week where 19 people were stabbed to death in like a type of like nursing home. And it really didn't make any waves. No one was changing their profile picture to a Japanese flag or anything like that. But we got an interesting story coming out tomorrow about why this wasn't really talked about much. I mean, these are people that are disabled and elderly that were stabbed to death in their beds. But, you know, why wasn't it some kind of international outrage and stuff? There's a couple reasons. We're going to be talking about that tomorrow. I think the obvious reason is that it wasn't a terrorist. It was just some mentally deranged dude that worked at the nursing home that thought that all old people needed to die. I mean, that's what the guy thought. And so since it wasn't terrorism, you can't really spin it into a political angle that can be beneficial for the U.S. government. So our media really laid off the story and didn't create the kind of frenzy that you would see after something like that happening. Had it been an Islamic terrorist in Japan, it would have been crazy international headlines. Everyone would have been, you know, sending their heart, their prayers and thoughts to Japan because they're so worried about the terrorism rising over there, but it's not. So no one really gave a shit. So we're going to be talking about that tomorrow. That's going to be a really interesting story. Also on the anti-media today, Obama signed the GMO labeling law, and that's interesting because on one hand, it's like, okay, they finally passed GMO labeling, and in a way, it's kind of good because you know, people want to know what they're eating and stuff. But on the other hand, this bill was backed by Monsanto and DuPont and a bunch of other companies that have for the longest time fought GMO labeling, and so there's definitely something else going on with this legislation, and we took a look at it today and found that it's really not what food activists have been looking for. It's not the GMO labeling bill that everyone wanted. In fact, it was kind of like a way to preempt what was going on with the Vermont GMO labeling bill, which was actually really strict and effective. This one actually gives the company the option of various ways they want to label it. Like, they could actually put like a 1-800 number on the back of the food and say, hey, if you want to know if this has GMO ingredients on it, call this 1-800 number and we'll tell you about it. It's like, wait, that's kind of like a huge deterrent. I mean, how many people are actually going to call that number? Or, you know, they also give them the option of putting a QR code on the back. I mean, how many people are going to open up their phone and scan a QR code before they buy something?
It's going to be easy for you to know that just to look for GMO Project Verified on the front. But if you know that, and like you're saying, Nick, most people aren't even going to check and don't know and don't even care. And this despite the fact that, you know, lab rats, which of course have an accelerated lifespan and thus show the effects of GMOs within a couple years, they get massive tumors. They die from these tumors. I mean, it causes cancer. With humans, it may take 40 or 50 years to affect you, and then you just die, and we never know why. And this may be part of the rising rates.
Very well could be. I mean, there's no telling. I mean, the amount of pesticides including glyphosate, now in the environment has gone up exponentially since the introduction of Roundup Ready genetically modified crops, and that's been, you know, there are plenty of concerns about that causing cancer, and plenty of countries have already stopped using that chemical. Of course, here in the U.S., they've you know, Monsanto has such a deep reach legislatively that, you know, there's not much you can do politically to roll back their products and stuff like that, and that's why this GMO labeling bill was watered down to the point where it might as well not have even passed before, you know, everyone, all the, you know, Monsanto and all these other companies jump on board and they're like, yeah, we're in favor of GMO labeling now as long as it looks like this. So, you know, this is not the legislation that people were looking for. And so there's always that to look into. I don't want to go too far into that tonight because it's just one of those topics that we've already covered so much.
Yeah, they've essentially, what they've done, just to briefly touch, is if you don't pay attention now, you can just assume you're eating all kinds of industrial garbage.
Pretty much. But, you know, a lot of people are paying a lot closer attention to what they're eating, and there's definitely a trend of more healthy eating going on all around the country, and so that's a good thing. And so people aren't eating quite as much crap that is going to make them sick or give them diabetes, and it's, you know, it's good because we need people to be healthy. We don't need people to be sick and dependent on pharmaceuticals and all this stuff. I mean, there's a lot of most of the things that are killing people, which you know, which are like heart disease and cancer and things like that, it can be prevented in some ways. You know, of course you can't 100% prevent cancer, but you can have a lifestyle which is you know, helping you not get it as often. And then diabetes, which is a huge epidemic with all the, you know, obesity issues going on and stuff. I mean, diabetes is taking a huge toll. Type 2 diabetes, it's preventable. It's preventable. And people, you know, just been eating way too much sugar. And again, it also does tie back into this GMO thing because, like 90% of the high fructose corn syrup, which is in like most of the sodas, and then it's the sweetener, it's the go-to sweetener now because it's so much cheaper than sugar, actual sugar, because it's heavily subsidized by the government, and, you know, all the corn production and how that's subsidized, that's what they use partially to make this high fructose corn syrup. So it's much cheaper, and so the government is kind of subsidizing our sweet diets, and, you know, indirectly giving people diabetes. So, you know, cut back.
The fake stuff has some things that were shown to be hormone disruptors in amphibians. So, I mean, they kind of trick now you into, if you're going to go diet, now you can have less kids. I mean, what is that? What kind of social engineering is that, Nick? That's weird.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that you can't really cheat on, you know, it's like, look, you got to cut back sweets, and you can't just pretend to cut back sweets. You can't take soda, you can't take regular soda out of your diet and replace it with diet soda. It's not, you're just replacing one bad thing with something that, you know, could be worse. And so, you know, I guess if people are going to be serious about the way they eat, you know, you got to take the sacrifice and stop eating as much sweet stuff. I mean, it's as simple as that. There's no magic product that you can replace sugar with that's going to taste the same and not give you the bad effects. I mean, it's just not a realistic expectation, I don't think. But I mean,
they've always correlated meat, wheat, and sweets with cancer. Like meat meaning like beef, you know, like really hard to digest meats, like dense proteins, because they just sit in there and they make an acid base in your stomach, and that's kind of what creates this environment for these cancerous cells to, you know, basically live. And the same with wheat, you know, because wheat of the yeast, it feeds it. And then sweets just finishes it off with even more yeast.
Oh, man. Yeah, not a good way to be eating. And
it's like all the best foods are awful for you.
Exactly. That's what sucks. And we've been encouraged for a long time with the food pyramid, which is like pretty not healthy, to eat like a bunch of grains and a bunch of carbohydrates and stuff, and then not exactly the best diet. But, you know, they taught us a bunch of bad science as we were growing up. I mean, everyone knows about the food pyramid, right? We all learned about that back in school. And, you know, unfortunately, it's not accurate. It's not the right way that we should be eating. But, you know, it's going to take generations for us to correct our eating habits. And, you know, there's various forces that are working against our health. I mean, firstly, looking at, like, the big food industry, I mean, they make tons of money by selling us this highly refined, highly, you know, processed food that is generally unhealthy for you. That's how they make their money. And then the pharmaceutical industry, who has to treat all these people that come down with all these sicknesses from the crap that they're eating. I mean, do they really want people to get healthy and so they don't have to go and get prescription medications? I mean, I don't...
And it's all just so typical that it's tied in to the cash crops that were tied to the slave trade, Nick, like sugar in the Caribbean on all the slave plantations in those islands. And then the large, huge fields of wheat where they actually used Irish slaves. And a lot of people don't really know that a lot of the original wheat farmers were indentured servants. I mean, given it wasn't nearly as bad as actual slavery, but until you paid yourself off, you were kept in a side shack too, you know, and you helped do that. So all these cash crops and all these things that fund our economy today, they're all, you know, Vatican-owned land, and they're all these 400, 500-year-old companies that are monopolies, like the United Fruit Company, those kind of things.
Yep. I mean, it's a huge problem, dude. And we're making progress slowly but surely, and people are starting to take this stuff more seriously. And, you know, I think the March Against Monsanto had some positive impact on that. I mean, I'm no longer part of that because it's maybe gone in a direction that I don't fully agree with. But, I mean, the food awakening is coming, and it's already here, and it's gonna reshape the economy. I mean, if you look at the organic food prices and the amount of people eating organic, the amount of stores supplying healthier foods and stuff now, I mean, it's drastically changing. You could see it in every visit to the grocery store. You see more organic stuff. You see more people buying that kind of stuff. I mean, I don't claim to eat fully organic or anything like that, but I definitely take a better look at what I'm eating nowadays because I've realized how much crap they're pumping us full of, man, and it's not good.
Yeah, one thing I've noticed, and you have too, I'm sure, is just the sheer massive amounts of farmer markets now, like all year round down there, and then up here, now we have one every day of the week, you know, so people will go to those and buy all their produce. And I went into a supermarket the other day, there wasn't anybody in there. And so you can tell they're getting, you know, up here butcher shops are big because the meat's cheaper and it's way better. And you can get like grass fed for the price of the corn fed crap at a supermarket. So why buy your meat at a supermarket here? You go to a butcher, and then you get your produce, and including eggs and including bread and cheese, all at the farmer market. I mean, all you really have left is if you get stuff that's frozen. I mean, that's what supermarkets are becoming now, and it's that's the food revolution. It's happening kind of organically that way.
Yeah, dude, and we can't forget about the importance of, like, growing your own food, too. I mean, one of our sister websites covered a story today about how people are starting to replace their lawns with gardens and stuff, and that's ultimately the best way to know what you're eating is by growing your own stuff, and you know what's going into it. And, I mean, various benefits of growing your own food. For one, it saves you money if you, you know, after some practice, you learn how to do it efficiently. You'll save a lot of money. You get much, much better tasting food, much healthier food that's denser in nutrients and stuff like that. And then, you know, the main issue here is kind of becoming self-reliant, because the more we're self-reliant, whether it's for our food or with energy, you know, getting decentralized solar power or, you know, going however you can off-grid, it's a very important way of taking back your freedom, because then when you grow your own food, then you can never have someone holding food over your head telling you what to do. When you generate your own power, same thing. You can't have someone hanging electricity over your head telling you, oh, you got to do this, you got to do that. You collect your own water. I mean, that's one thing that's here where I'm at. You know, we're in the middle of a drought still, and the El Nino didn't really perform the way that people were expecting. We didn't get as much rainfall as we wanted and stuff. And
what's that doing to the crops, Nick? It's got to be affecting food supply. I mean, I'm seeing prices skyrocket here in the supermarkets because we get a lot of our produce, ridiculously enough, from California, but only the major supermarkets. Like, all the organic, local-grown stuff is from, obviously, Minnesota up here. But, like, have you noticed food, just the prices going up because of this?
Yeah, I mean, food is really expensive right now, much more expensive than I remember it being. And, yeah, you know, the thing is that many people don't know. Everyone thinks California, it's like, oh, it's, you know, Southern California, and it's Hollywood, and it's Silicon Valley and stuff. California grows like – California is the greatest producer of farming products of any state. I mean, it grows a huge, huge chunk of the produce for the country. And even the dairy and the meat and all that stuff. I mean, up in the Central Valley, we have in California, it's basically the single one of the best places in the world to grow all types of food. The climate is great. I mean, the soil is great. It's a perfect place. The only thing that's lacking there is the rainfall. So they got to import water from various places and get creative about where they get their water. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is this drought on the West Coast, it's going to affect people all over the country because that's where the food comes from. And it's not many people realize that, but it's so true. I want to shift a little bit here into some election news. We had this hilarious meme that I used for the introduction today for the show. I'm going to pull it up here because it was just, I can't remember what it said, but it was just so funny. I'm sure there's a bunch of people listening tonight that saw the meme because that's what I used to link the radio show. There's this guy holding a sign. I don't know if it's a homeless guy or if it's just a guy out there holding a sign, but he says, running for president need campaign funds. And his campaign promises is 1, to deport Trump to Mexico, 2, put Hillary in jail, and 3, legalize marijuana. I mean, this thing is hilarious, man, but it kind of goes to show, I mean, this meme is probably the most viral radio meme I've had since 2 months ago. So it kind of goes to show just the dissatisfaction with the political system, the choices that people have right now for president. I'm going to open up the phone lines. Hopefully there are technical issues earlier in the show didn't mess up the phone lines here. If anybody wants to call in to talk about this election, we're going to have open lines tonight. The number to call in is 718-717-8296. If you get on the line, make sure you keep your microphone muted until we come to you, and you'll know because we'll mention your area code that you're calling in from. But man, this election is just becoming such a huge circus, and I guess people who've been paying attention for like the last couple election cycles aren't so surprised because every election is a circus in the United States. But this one is spectacularly ridiculous, I guess you could say. And I mean, it's just so crazy that there are some people that are still standing by Trump with his ridiculous things that he's been saying. I mean, his war with this guy whose son died in Iraq, and albeit, I mean, I, you know, his the guy that the son of this Muslim guy shouldn't have been in Iraq in the first place. He shouldn't have been over there fighting because the war was based on lies and stuff. I get that. But the fact of the matter is America loves their soldiers. America loves their police. And they're going to defend them. I mean, Trump is literally committing political suicide by going after this guy. And now his poll numbers have shown a major decline compared to Hillary Clinton. I think she's taken in some polls a 10% lead. I mean, now there's talk that Trump may walk away from the race. I mean, if anything, this looks like those conspiracy theories about Trump working for Clinton. I mean, it makes them look a little more realistic. It's crazy.
Nick, what WikiLeaks was showing was direct donations from the Clinton Foundation to Trump's, some of his shell companies, including a payment made to his son, and then even weirdly enough to Ted Cruz. The DNC actually paid Ted Cruz to attack Trump. So this shows what, I mean, say what you will about the guy. He can't be really an insider if they're all kind of ganging up on him. Now I see even that GOP guys are jumping on Hillary's train. and saying because Trump's unfit, which by and large I totally agree, and so is Hillary. I mean, Hillary had a meltdown at a one of her pathetic rallies she had with like 200 people that showed up, and who knows how many of them were paid. At least 50 or 60 of them were like high school kids that were probably forced to be there because it was at a high school. And you know, she kind of had a meltdown on stage where she took like a 15-second just pause up on stage. You can tell the pressure's getting to her. So it wouldn't be inconceivable for both to drop out and something really crazy to happen, because she's truly unelectable. If Trump were to fall out and they ran somebody who is legitimate, and I don't even know if the RNC has anyone who's legitimate. Can they get Kucinich? I mean, or is he is he available? I don't know. Like, does anybody have morals on the RNC side they can run? Like, who'd be worth a damn and could just tear it to shreds at the same time? I don't know. She's not going to withstand whoever replaces Trump.
Much baggage there with Clinton. Just so much ridiculous baggage. I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, the DNC thing, and I see Trump was out saying yesterday and the day before, he's like, you know what, these elections are going to be rigged against me and this, that, and the other. And first of all, it's like, dude, you're probably right. The elections are rigged. I mean, we all know the DNC was favoring Clinton through various means, according to the WikiLeaks emails that we got. And of course, there's plenty of questions regarding the safety of electronic voting machines and all these other ways that are used to manipulate voters and stuff like that. But why would they have to rig the election against Trump when he's destroying himself? I mean, that's the thing. The guy is literally destroying himself, and he's
a paid actor, right?
He's just so ridiculous.
Didn't he get $2 billion worth of media coverage for his name, which is basically his brand? If you keep hearing Trump, like, I was just, you know, in Philly, we were there for the DNC, and then one of the days earlier before it started, the convention, we went and drove to the Jersey Shore, Atlantic City, and the Trump Taj Mahal was there, and that place was packed with people getting their pictures in front of it, and then they went in, and they spent money. But Trump made some damn good money from this whole thing. I mean, yeah, he might have hurt his personal reputation, but he doesn't give a damn about that. Trump, the brand, is now in a better position for marketing probably than it's ever been.
I don't doubt it, man. I don't doubt it. And then we got Clinton over here today, or was it last night? I don't know. The video came through today that I've been seeing went viral. She's giving a speech and about, you know, how bad Trump is and how he loves billionaires. And here's the golden little phrase that she spit out today. And the most hilarious thing was that the audience applauded it. Check this out.
Trump wants to cut taxes for the super rich. Well, we're not going there, my friends. I'm telling you right now, we're going to write fairer rules for the middle class, and we aren't going to raise taxes on the middle class.
What'd you think?
Now that is a hell of a promise.
Oh man, that was so funny, dude. I watched it earlier and I was like, you know, obviously she was misspeaking because, you know, she wouldn't say that on purpose. There's no way in hell.
It's Freudian.
It's political suicide. But yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. It's a Freudian slip, because everything that Clinton has been promising to everybody is more or less going to be a huge, giant raise on middle class taxes. Same thing that Obama's been doing. I mean, if you look at probably the biggest rise in taxes for anyone in the middle class or below, I mean, that's Obamacare, right? That's a major, huge tax that everyone's going to have to pay. And if you can't afford health care, too bad. And for a person like me who can't really afford health care, I didn't get it last year, and they charged me like $400. The IRS charged me $400 for not having health care. You know, so that's a huge tax. And so the funny thing is that everyone knows that you can't say I'm going to raise tax on the middle class because it'd be political suicide. But everyone also knows that politicians have continuously been raising taxes on the middle class ever since like a long time ago, like the 70s or earlier. And yet it's not political suicide when they actually do it. You know what I mean? It's pretty funny. the way that works. But I mean, all these wars and stuff, and including the stuff Clinton and what Trump would continue with Obama, and then in many ways, I think Hillary would be even more aggressive on foreign policy than Obama. I mean, all of this stuff, wars and the bailouts and just the Federal Reserve itself and the monetary system, all of it raises taxes on the middle class, you know?
Nick, where would we go, I mean, otherwise? Because there's really only a couple end games for empire. I mean, there's really only a couple. It's either you win the whole damn game or you lose and go home. And we're still in the game. We're still playing the game. And when I say win the whole damn game, I mean, obviously, we've been trying and will forever be trying, because of the people that rule this country are the same descendants of those that made the proclamation that we would have manifest destiny. And that didn't mean stopping at the Pacific coast. We've continued. We now own the Philippines. We own a huge base just south of Japan, our mortal enemy, so they could never really pose a threat again. I mean, we're now encroaching into China's territorial disputes with the South China Sea. We're not going to ever stop. That's why North Korea is as psychopathic as they are. I mean, if you go and research World War II, you'll find it really never ended. It just became the Korean War. And we bombed the hell out of North Korea so hard, they lost a third of their civilian population. So that's why they became as militant as we are. They spend the same 67% of their GDP on military that we do, when you figure in black ops. So that's what it is, dude. It's Pax Americana or bust. And it doesn't matter if we go broke, the Fed will just keep printing and we'll just keep bombing.
Yeah, as long as we maintain the military edge around the world, the dollar will never really experience that hyperinflation that have been experienced by a lot of people around the world, including our neighbors to the south. You know, hyperinflation happens when you print a bunch of money and you're not backing it with something. The thing for the United States is that we are backing it with something, and it's the most powerful military in the world as of right now. You know, and so it's a different scenario. We've got the empire, and we've got, for now, the means to hold it together. And, you know, it is a global hegemony, but it's working right now. But it's a matter of, you know, looking at the positives versus the negatives. I mean, the average American, sure, I mean, they're more rich than, you know, the average American is a one percenter when you look at the whole globe's, you know, standard of living. People in Africa, people in third world countries, people in these highly populated Asian countries, they live like shit compared to we do. I mean, we're the poorest people in the United States are richer than the middle class of third world countries and stuff. But there's a cost to all that, and it's in blood mostly. And, you know, the chickens eventually come home to roost. I mean, that's why we're going back into Libya, which is another story we covered on the anti-media today. Obama authorizes 30 days worth of bombing in Libya. Those not familiar with Libya, we've talked about it plenty of times. Something Hillary Clinton was very in favor of and Obama wound up doing.
30 days or 15,000 bombs, whichever's more.
Yeah, whichever comes first. So we knocked out the Syrian government back in 2009 and made a big mess of that country. It was at one point the most prosperous country in the continent of Africa, and now it's pretty much ruined thanks to us and our supposed thirst for democracy. That's the thing that's so hypocritical, I guess you could say, about what went on in Libya, because if you remember, we kind of went in there shortly after the Egyptian revolution and we said, hey, we can't allow Gaddafi to be mean to his own people. I mean, he's killing thousands of his own people. I don't doubt that he did kill a lot of people. I don't know if it was thousands of people like was said in the media, but I'm sure he did kill, you know, protesters and stuff. But it's very hypocritical because our allies in the Middle East, including Saudi Arabia, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, Turkey, a bunch of countries like that that happen to be our allies, they did pretty much the same exact thing. They repressed their protesters. They jailed people for being activists and journalists. In fact, Saudi Arabia is like an ongoing policy to jail people that are journalists and activists. I mean, Turkey now famously purging its entire opposition, whether it's journalism, military, political, philosophical, even schools. They're shutting down schools now in Turkey because they think teachers may be teaching stuff to kids that are too democratic or too secular in nature. But it's no big deal. You know, I mean, John Kerry has briefly mentioned, oh, I wish Turkey wasn't doing that. But if it were someone like that, like Iran that was doing it, I mean, bombs would already be flying.
You know? That's what happened before World War One, when they did the Armenian genocide, when they kind of like got rid of all the intellectual class to get rid of like voices of dissent that were, you know, logical to the people. Like it happens everywhere else when you're about to commit a huge, huge massacre on your supposed enemies. And they killed 1 million of 3.5 million Armenians. So they wiped out about a third of their pop or a little less. And now, as a result of that, who do you think Armenia is allowed to build the biggest, massivest land base you could imagine? Russia. So, like, Russia's right on Turkey's border. And they basically just plopped themselves there waiting for Turkey to do something stupid like they just did.
Yeah, and now Turkey is moving in on the Kurds, man, because the Kurds, they make up the biggest minority group in Turkey, and I think they number somewhere around 20% of the population, I believe. And the Kurds are pro-democratic, pro-secular, and Erdogan, who is the president of Turkey, he's trying to turn Turkey into an Islamic state. He's trying to turn Turkey into Saudi Arabia, where he's the king. So far, the U.S. and everyone else in the West, and keep in mind, Turkey is the only Middle Eastern member of NATO. Everyone else is like kind of looking the other way and just letting them do what they want, because for now, Turkey's still playing their role as our NATO puppet. And
they're like going to be the first, if we get into like an actual proxy war, where like our troops go in and they'll wear the NATO banner, and then they'll fight on the border right there in Armenia against that big base there, that Russian base, and then we'll see what happens. Like it won't be in Turkey; it'll actually be in Armenia, most of it. But I mean, obviously, if Russia mud stomps them, like I'm guessing they probably will, even with all the buildup going on, the land power of Russia's undeniable. You know, they can probably take Turkey out if they want. It's just, where do you go from there? You know, it create that, that's when it becomes global, because then by default NATO has to become involved. And that's, you know, the only thing right now I think holding things up is like Poland right now, and a couple other, the middle countries are like not completely with NATO. They don't want to be used as the battlegrounds. I think that's the only thing kind of holding up this from escalating right now. And then of course the pipeline.
Yeah, I mean, I think those Eastern European countries have, they've got, you know, they got used in World War II as kind of the battleground states, you know, where the majority of the fighting wasn't done in Germany or in Russia, per se. It was fought on that eastern flank there, and all those countries got destroyed because other people were fighting wars on either side of them. And so they don't want to make that mistake. And also, I think they're also skeptical of Russia because of, you know, a lot of them are former Soviet states and that kind of thing. So they don't want to fall back under Soviet type of control and, you know, just authoritarianism. But they also don't want to be part of Western imperialism in the name of democracy either, you know. And so these, you're right, man. I think a lot of these countries out there in Eastern Europe is really our only hope to try to build up some kind of, you know, I wouldn't call it a peace, but not a big giant war. You know, what we have right now isn't a huge war. It's kind of like just a bunch of unofficial proxy wars going on around the world. And kind of resource grabs and stuff like that, but there isn't any big time like invasions from or major battles between major countries. But that could all change in a matter of just a few days if the wrong things are done. I mean, we got pretty close after Turkey shot down that Russian jet and it became pretty clear that, you know, things were ratcheting up over there. But then Russia had all this intel on Turkey, and they released it showing how they were funding ISIS, and then things got quiet over there. You know, and I don't know what it's going to take, whether it's this crackdown, whether it's the recent findings about Turkey funding ISIS.
But this kind of stuff always, like, if you look back at all the stuff going on in the 30s, it was kind of like that, too. Like, all these, like, for 5 or 6 years, there was, like, especially when the Nazi Party came into power in 33, there was all this propaganda back and forth and this massive buildup, like, it's going on right now, like... There were, you know, accusations flying around in papers that would be an equivalent of muckraking or whatever. But, you know, WikiLeaks is much more legitimate because it's impartial. It doesn't have advertising. You know, they ask for your donations and they get whistleblowers to come out of the into the open, you know, of their own volition. They're not getting paid. And unfortunately for this DNC guy, it looks like he was the dude that got gunned down. I don't know if you heard at all anything about that, Nick, but... A lot of the times these whistleblowers, they pay the ultimate price. And so it becomes more credible that way instead of just being muckraking or yellow journalism like it was prior to World War II actually popping off. So it's just different, but it's still the same.
Yeah, the propaganda wars are on and popping. I mean, the anti-China rhetoric and the actions from the Obama administration in the South China Sea, not very encouraging for world peace, I'll tell you that much. And then what we did in Ukraine, what we're doing in Syria, these are things that are very important to the Russians. I mean, we're really prodding the bear over there. And we're kind of pushing Russia and China together. And they've never been enemies, but they weren't really ever that close together for whatever reason. But we're pushing Russia and China together, and that's a marriage that is very much... I mean, if Russia and China formalize their alliance militarily, I mean, that would be a legitimate counterbalance to NATO. It really would, because China has got the population and a lot of technology, and Russia's got all the technology and all the major weapons and stuff. I mean, they're not as technologically advanced as we are, but they've got a bunch of the stuff that we have.
They're just a different branch. I think people should know, like, when Paperclip came to us, they had their own equivalent. They got, you know, we got Wernher von Braun, and they got his brother. And his brother was like an expert in actual rocketry. So that's why they have the best surface-to-air missile, you know, the S, whatever they are, at this point 500 or something, the fifth gen. But, like, we dare not fly. Like, Hillary's hilarious when she says she would install a no-fly zone in Syria, because it's already there anyway right now with SAMs. So it's just more propaganda, you know. What she's saying is that they would shoot missiles at those SAMs and blow them up, and then they'd start flying over Syria. And then in response, Russia would just shoot down our planes, and then it would be on.
Exactly. Very, very irresponsible rhetoric coming from Clinton, but she gets a pass on it, right? When Trump says a bunch of stupid shit, everybody and their mother is like, oh, Trump said this stupid shit again. And when Clinton says something, it's like, oh, wow, she's so experienced. That's such – wow, she's going to kill a lot of people. That's so great, you know. And it's ridiculous, the media treatment that Clinton gets compared to Trump's. And I think both of them are pretty much equally crappy, but Trump definitely gets treated differently in the media because, as we've mentioned various times in this program, he's a loose cannon. He's not – as predictable as Clinton. Clinton has a long track record of being a neocon on foreign policy and a neoliberal on economics, and that's what the establishment wants because that's the status quo, and that'll keep the ball rolling and all the money rolling in for them. Now, Trump would probably do the same exact thing, but he's not as predictable, can't be counted on. Probably they don't have as much leverage over Trump because if at any point the powers that be wanted Clinton to be indicted, it would happen. The reason she hasn't been indicted, because she's done plenty of things to be indicted. As James Comey said, the FBI guy, you know, if it had been any, you know, I'm not saying that no one else would have been, you know, disciplined under similar circumstances. Basically what he's saying is, look, we've got the stuff to indict her, but we're not going to at this time. Because that kind of information and that kind of leverage, it's priceless. When someone's a president, you've got an indictment that you can hold over their head. where you can say, look, you're president, but you're going to jail if you don't do what we tell you. I mean, that's pretty strong leverage. And that's why Clinton is not going to be indicted unless she were to get in power and do something that they didn't want her to do, which isn't going to happen. She's going to do what they want her to do, and that's why she's getting the favorable treatment. That's why the DNC basically screwed Bernie Sanders out of the election, because he's not as predictable either. You know, Clinton is definitely the go-to candidate for the establishment in the race.
Well, what Bernie would have done was what he would have truly exposed how much money the military takes. And when people realized that all the stuff he would have promised couldn't have been done without us actually not only auditing the Fed, but we'd have to get in there and figure out what the GDP percentage would be. When people realize it's 67%, meaning 2 out of every 3 of your dollars in tax go right to the military, then you realize they are the 1% that we're fighting against. It's not really the bankers. The bankers just kind of are their middlemen. The real 1% are the people that take 2 out of every 3 tax dollars and buy like the $500 hammers and the $5,000 toilets that show up on these stupid audits that, you know, are renowned from the 80s. So you can imagine what it is now, Nick. I mean, I just read that now the Pentagon can't account for $6.5 trillion. And I know when not, it was at 2. So now it's an additional $4.5 trillion. So think about that, people. How many years has it been? 15, Nick? So $4.5 trillion in 15 years? Is my math right when I'm thinking we're at like $400 billion a year where it just disappears?
It's a lot of money, dude.
I mean, isn't that enough to send everyone to college, send everyone to free health care, give everyone a pension, give everyone a year off when they have a kid? I mean, with $400 billion, you can live a France lifestyle.
That stuff is unaffordable, bro. That's the thing. How are we going to pay for all that stuff?
Stop shooting $1 million missiles at people that live in mud huts.
There you go. I mean, on that note, here's a funny thing today. The military, I think it was the Air Force, was announcing that the F-35 is finally battle ready. You hear about that?
It's been ready.
F-35 is what's, I don't know, I guess it's one of the most expensive military projects ever conducted. I think it came out to like $1.5 trillion that it took to develop this jet, and it's like it's basically a jet that has some like stealth abilities, and it's just the next generation American fighter jet or whatever. You know, this thing costs $1.5 plus trillion, and I saw an interesting comparison about how you could like pay for decades of college. 23 years of college, according to one estimate, for everyone in the United States, if we hadn't have developed this jet. $1.45 trillion to develop the jet. It could have sent everyone in the United States to college for 23 years. And yet, when people talk about free college, it's like, oh my God, there's no way we can pay for this. But hey, check out this jet. We can build this jet.
Could we just fantasize for a minute what the next 3 or 4 generations would do if free college for our overall country? How many people would just be now engineers, doctors, lawyers, whatever, because they had the grades but not the money? I mean, that happens all the time, and we could fix everything in our country if we had a whole bunch more educated people.
Yeah, I mean, police brutality would go down, racism would go down, a lot of the issues that we have would go down. Now, not saying the college system is perfect by any means. It's messed up as it is. It needs to be reformed too. But I mean, this jet thing is just ridiculous. Ridiculous. And it's finally ready after all these years of developing it and stuff. And it's just like, God, do we really need another jet to go drop bombs in the desert on people who have zero technology, that are living in caves using AK-47s made out of wood and steel? Do we really need a $1.5 trillion jet to go fight these guys?
Well, that's for China and Russia, Nick. I mean, that's on the hush.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that when was the last time the U.S., when was the last time any of our jets were in an actual, dogfight? I mean, maybe when
Vietnam, maybe.
The first time, maybe.
No, Vietnam. No, we had air superiority since Vietnam.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, we haven't really been our jets. We haven't really needed a fighter jet in decades, but they're spending $1.5 trillion. I think there's other things we could use, like maybe the fact that we have all these homeless people, the fact that we have all these veterans that are committing, 23 veterans a day committing suicide. We've got, you know, 30% of the kids of the country's kids going hungry at times. Massive inequality. I mean, there are definitely better things to use this money on, but no, they wanted a fighter jet. I mean, this is just ridiculousness. But hey, at least it's finally ready to fight.
I guess, Nick, they were heavily used in the new Independence Day.
There you go.
They were the squadron that could fight and defeat the alien UFOs. So they have value, Nick.
Yeah, there you go. At least there's a use for them there. What else, man? So many things going on. Mainstream media talking about how we got to knock out Assad to defeat ISIS. I mean, how much dumber can you get? That story we covered yesterday. We've got a lot of good Syria coverage. We've got a new writer on our team that's covering a lot of geopolitical stuff over in the Middle East. Covered three stories from Syria the last 2 days. The other one, yeah, I mentioned at the beginning of the show, 10 Facts the Mainstream Media Won't Tell You About Syria. Definitely go read that one on the website. And then how Europe is getting rich by fueling its own terror epidemic. Very interesting article here. It's about how a bunch of countries in Europe are sending billions of dollars worth of arms over into conflicts in Syria and Yemen and other places like that. They're being done, you know, supposedly in illegal means, but according to experts, it's very ethically challenged the way that they're doing these sales. A lot of it is going to Saudi Arabia and countries like
that. Saudi Arabia is the third largest arms purchaser, or they have the third largest GDP for defense. They spend about 40% of what China does, and they spend more than Russia. I mean, dude, what do they have over there? I think maybe they have nukes.
I wouldn't doubt if Saudi Arabia had nukes. Obviously, they can't use them. But they're using a lot of weapons that they're trying to use. They're trying to, you know, construct a...
They're losing, though, fighting Iran. The proxy war in Yemen, they just lost because now the Houthi youth have bombed inside of Saudi Arabia. And it's been the first time Saudi Arabia's had a direct hit within their borders. So Iran is winning for sure.
Yeah, because it's kind of like the battle between what the U.S. does in the Middle East and what Russia does. I mean, Iran tends to back organic movements like the Houthi rebels, which were people that were already trying to overthrow the Yemeni government. And Iran kind of goes in and just gives them a little bit of help. And then what Saudi Arabia does is it goes in and tries to manufacture a completely new opposition group. And just like kind of like what they're doing in Syria and why it's not working and why it's become a bloody stalemate. In fact, it would appear that Saudi Arabia is just...
My name is S.M. Gibson.